From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour begins on Friday when Jazz Street comes to life again. This is the 21st edition of the Rochester International Jazz Festival. This year's event runs 9 days and includes more than 325 shows at a wide range of different venues in Rochester. Plenty of free music, some ticket, we'll talk about that. The 21st annual festival is going to run through June 29th. And you know what it is like in the city. I mean, I'm a kind of a homer for this, but we'll talk about this. I think it's one of the coolest things to see the city lit up every year like it is in late June. And this hour, it's our annual preview of the festival. We're going to talk with one of the co-producers this hour about what music and jazz lovers can expect. We're going to hear what some of the artists have to say who will be here to perform. You can see the full schedule at rochesterjazz.com. And the co-producer of the CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival is John Nugent, who's back with us. Hello, John.
Hey, Evan. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing is
I'm
the better question.
Good
what are we,
go.
3 days away?
Flatlined at the moment, feeling really good.
What does that mean, flatlined?
Just calm.
You're feeling 3 days away. How are you calm?
Well, putting the program together, I'm not. I just ask my wife about October and November when we're basically fishing for as many great artists as we can find. And that's the difficult part, building the puzzle. And now with Mark and I, we have a great team of people who are taking over with installations and setting everything up and getting everything in place. And, you know, there's, of course, a lot of activity, but I feel calm, to be honest with you.
You open on Friday. Mm-hmm. What are you excited about on Friday?
Well, it's great to see the buzz in the lines and people, you know, checking out venues they've never been to before. We've got a couple of new venues this year at the Inn on Broadway and the Duke in the Mercantile Building on East Avenue, directly across from Parcel 5. There's some great shows in there. And I'm just excited to see the buzz. And I rode over on my Vespa from our ticket shop on East Avenue where people are coming to redeem their Club Pass tickets for their credential and their lanyards. And you feel the atmosphere. It's building. You know, there's something going on. What's happening? Oh, they're getting ready for the jazz festival in downtown, and you can feel that energy. It's busier, and there's a buzz, so that's fun for me.
We talk about this just about every year, but I want to get a sense on, you know, 21st edition here. Is this cruising altitude in terms of the size of the festival? Is there anything that you sort of haven't done that you want to do? How do you feel?
I would say we are at altitude now for sure. And Mark and I always say it's not about being bigger and bigger and bigger. It's about being the best and the most well-run, efficient, high-level artistic programming that we can put together. And we've maxed out the capacities at all of our venues in downtown. There's only so many people can fit on Parcel 5. There's only so many that can fit on Gibbs Street based on code, you know, the fire code and capacities. So we've hit all those numbers, and it's generally slightly over 200,000 every year, and we expect to hit those numbers again. The weather looks great. I think all the free shows will be well attended. So in 21 years, yeah, we tweak every year. We've always adjust with the times and deal with what we're dealt and put in front of us, what we have to deal with, and we execute and deliver. Try to deliver a diverse program for everybody as we can.
It's interesting that you say 3 days away, you're actually feeling pretty calm. And actually, the more I think about it, I really hope so. It's not like you're booking venues right now. I mean, you said really in the fall is when you're
it's
really
a jigsaw puzzle, right? It's a massive puzzle, and our team relies on me to deliver that puzzle every year, the program, the music. And it's fun. It's so much fun listening to so many different styles, and we have well over 1,000 submissions that we're unable to program. And it's not like the first year where we had to go hunt for artists. Now they come to us, and the reputation of the festival speaks for itself internationally. You know, they know about us in Odense, Denmark, or in Stuttgart, Germany. They know about the Rochester International Jazz Festival in foreign countries.
How long did that take before? How many years in did that take?
I would say 7, 8 years, 9 years. Once the artist came here and felt the vibe and felt the audience and felt the energy and how they were treated, which is really important to me as a musician myself. I toured internationally in the 80s with the Woody Herman Orchestra and lived on a tour bus. I know how the artists feel when they're traveling, how they want to be treated when they show up, how they want to be reacted to by the audience, and how they want to be paid and dealt with. And we do all those things basically the way I want to be dealt with, you know, and that's translated to the entire team. And they know that the music and the artists are number one. The audience, of course, very close second. But the music is why we do this. And we want to make sure they're all really looked after, and they leave here talking about the festival. And that's how the word spreads internationally, because we have so many bands from around the world.
No, I think that your history as a performer and that experience on the road is really important here and probably shouldn't be understated, because for many of these performers, certainly not all now, 21 years in, but for many, this is still a first time in Rochester.
Yeah.
It's a first time deciding to go play a festival in a city that certainly people have heard of, but, you know, maybe many people haven't been to. So you're trusting a producer, you're trusting a reputation, but you also want to have a good experience, right? And so if you are not prioritizing how they're doing, I'm sure there's places that performers go where you feel kind of like a piece of meat.
No doubt. And I've experienced that. You know, I've definitely experienced that. And like I said, we want to treat the artists the way we would want to be treated. When you go into someone's home, you know, they serve you something nice to eat, I hope, and they take care of you and you feel good and you leave happy and smiling. And that was a good experience. And that's what we endeavor to do with every artist who comes here, our transport team, our accommodations, you know, the backline production that they get. The advancing work, an audience that shows up on a ticket with a good value to it, and they're excited because they've got a great deal. The artists, we try to pay them all before they play. They come out and give their A performance, and there's an electricity that's in art. The electricity that when music or art touches a person's soul, the energy that comes from that, you can't grab it. You just feel it in your heart. You feel it in your soul. And that's what makes great music so special and why the artists leave here. They know the audiences have had a great experience. They've played their hearts out. Hopefully they've sold a bunch of recordings after, and they leave energized. And we want our audience to leave energized. And so it's a cumulative effect of value, artistry, well-tuned production, and everything happens on time. It's like a Swiss watch, this festival.
Well, I mean, in 21 editions in, one big change for what artists are going through is they certainly can sell music, and they do, mm-hmm. and they would love for people to buy their music on all the various formats that you can. But they also understand now, in the streaming world that we're in, that live performance is a huge piece of what they have to do to make a living. Mm-hmm. Selling some merchandise, yes. Performing live, you know. More and more I talk to touring bands, and they say, you know, I mean,
it's 85% of their revenues, 85 to 90,
I mean,
I would say.
Was it always? I don't know what the puzzle used to look like.
Depending on the genre, you know, back in the day, the big rock stars, you know, a buddy of mine, Ed Bicknell in London, who managed Dire Straits, you know, he said we'd have 70,000 tickets and we'd do, you know, an average of $80 to $100 a head in merchandise sales. Back then.
That number boggles
everybody
the mind.
Needs a t-shirt or a hat or, you know, some memorabilia, and same with the Stones or U2, any of those big touring rocks. Those were a lot of revenue streams for those guys. Now the artists here today, the jazz artists, CDs or downloadable, you know, a card with a download.
Some are doing vinyl.
Some are doing vinyl. Actually, Stephen Bernstein, Millennial Territory, shipped 30 copies of his latest vinyl to the office to sell on the gig. So people will buy, you know, it's old school still. It's not gone. We're still, you know, there's some old school people who want to spin the disc, and artists who sell those as well.
All right. Let me ask you a totally off the board question, mm-hmm. but I'm just curious. We had a conversation recently about a Randy Travis song. So
okay.
I'm not a huge Randy Travis fan, but I know many people are, and he was a big country star, mm-hmm. and, you know, forever and ever, amen, and, you know.
Sure.
Well, about 10, 11 years ago, he had medical conditions that basically robbed him of the ability to keep singing.
Mm-hmm.
And so no new music from him. And what a team of producers did was they took dozens of samples of his voice over a 30-year period, and they used AI to create a Randy Travis song.
Collaged.
They're calling it a Randy Travis song, even though he didn't sing it. He didn't write the music. It's not his song. Producers wrote it. But they thought it was in the style of him. And his wife said, and Randy's still with us, he loves it. His wife says it feels like hearing him again. But it's AI. It's not him. And when
when
I go to the jazz festival, I love seeing... Like, I'm watching, especially in jam sessions, you're seeing some of the most unbelievable talent, and it's human talent.
Yep.
And that's what I prefer. And I don't mean to, like, denigrate Randy Travis or his family, if you love the music, you love it. But I don't think we should call that a Randy Travis song.
I would say would be like hologram shows.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a big fan of that. You know, like a Michael Jackson hologram show. They were touring with that. And look, if it sells, you know, sadly in this world, there's a lot of things that sell that I don't understand why they sell, but they do. And you know, AI is a positive thing in many ways for today's world, but it also has a negative on the creative side. And I wouldn't say copyright infringement, or it's a very broad topic, AI, and it's such a part of, you know, mobility, vehicles, different ways of doing things, you know, ChatGPT and, you know, Siri, the things that you have are helping things be better, but they also have a downside, if you will.
I'm worried it could take jobs away from artists.
There's nothing like hearing a live artist play their instrument in front of you. They're speaking through their instrument. And for me, that'll always win the day. But, you know, bless those that use the AI. If it makes them happy and people want to listen to it, great. But, you know, I'd rather hear a live performance by people playing instruments.
I agree. In a moment, we're going to start to go through the schedule. And John will tell you, you know, what kind of stands out. You're not going to go over through every single, how many, more than 300?
There's shows? 325 concerts. In the club series, there's, 232 sets of music. And every group does 260-minute sets. We don't have any reserve seats. So if you have a pass, you can go to as many shows as you want. It's a different, it's reverse psychology concert promoting. Why do people buy a ticket? Because they know the artist. Well, we give the ticket holder here a value to hear as many as they want to hear, especially those they don't know yet. And inevitably, they'll enjoy those artists and become fans of those artists. And eventually, in other cities, they'll go hear them, pay to go hear them at the door or, you know, in advance. So ours is free-flowing, general admission, no reserve seats, and all the venues are packed. So psychologically, for an artist who's never been here and they walk into the room and there's 250, 350 people, wow. They love me. Well, they're going to love you, but they have a value in their past as well. And I booked you because I love you. That's why, you know, and I dig your music. And that, so it's a, again, it's a little bit of reverse psychology concert promoting, and it's developed over a long period of time here, and it's set, and people love it. And it's a win-win for everybody.
So we'll go through some of the specifics in a moment, rochesterjazz.com. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, let me just ask you about a conversation that was on the show a couple of weeks ago in which some of the organizers of some events this week were critical of the Jazz Festival. They wanted to link up with you guys. The way that it was described to me is the Jazz Festival has told performers, you be you, you talk about what you want to talk about, you want to talk about Juneteenth, you want to talk about other things, that's up to you. Like free reign.
Last time I checked.
Up to the performers. Whereas the organizers of some local Juneteenth events have hoped to put something under the Jazz Festival banner. Didn't happen. They ended up organizing their own Rock Juneteenth Jazz event at the Highland Bowl this past weekend. Gloria Johnson Hovey was one of the organizers there. I want to listen a little bit of what she had to say and let John respond if he wants to. This is Gloria.
The music came from enslaved people. And to not recognize the event of Juneteenth, the end of chattel slavery, it's egregious. You can promote and make money off of continuing to make money off of the backs of enslaved people, but we're not going to discuss the plight, and we're not going to recognize that awful thing happened. Something beautiful came out of this, the music, the sounds, the rhythms. But we're just interested in, people coming in and making money and leaving.
So I asked Gloria, you know, the organizers of the festival have said that it is absolutely up to the artists, and if they want to acknowledge Juneteenth or make statements or whatever, that they can do that there's no prohibition on that. And she said she understands that, but she wanted an actual something under the banner and was disappointed not to get
it. Well, she's a programmer, a producer, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm colorblind, man. So I don't buy some of the comments she had there. But you look at our program, it's heavily African-American presented, and I'm not offended by her comments, but I'm confused by them. She's a producer. She wants to be involved. And it's like every artist who wants a gig here, I can't book everybody. Our dates don't fall on the same dates as Juneteenth. No disrespect to her. She's entitled to do whatever she wishes to recognize the beautiful music that African Americans brought to our country. It's the only American art form we delivered to the world, jazz. So I don't subscribe to any animosity at all. You look at our program, it's very, very diverse. And sometimes things work out, sometimes things don't. And, you know, I don't know what else I can say, but she's entitled to her opinion, but I don't subscribe to that.
Would you seek to prevent any performer from
never.
Making comments?
Absolutely never. No, of course not. Artists are free to say what they want, and it's their production, man. We just provide the platform for that. And they play their music. I want them to play from their heart and from their soul and deliver whatever influences they have as a musician on our stage. That's what we do. And we can't engage everybody because we get asked by a lot of organizations to participate, we've been here for 21 years and the community loves the event. And again, I'm colorblind, man. So there you go.
John Nugent is the co-producer of the CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, rochesterjazz.com. A lot of free music for people mm-hmm. who want to come out and see it. And certainly there's passes and ticketed events, et cetera. But let's start with the outdoor stages and where people are going to find the main daily and nightly venues.
Sure. The Jazz Street stage is all nine nights. We have our East Avenue and Chestnut Street stage with Kristone Kingfish Ingram. You want to talk about African-American artists. This guy is blowing the world up with his guitar. He is the new B.B. King.
That's a big statement.
I stand right by it. The guy rips. He's unbelievable. He was on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago. He's a genius blues guitar player. It's June 22nd, free show at Chestnut Street and East Avenue. Sheila E. on Wednesday the 26th at Parcel 5, thanks to Wegmans and the City of Rochester. Wegmans is supporting our Parcel 5 stage. Los Lonely Boys from Cuba, Afro-Cuban Sima Funk, which is an absolute rage of a party. Great act. And closing, celebrating New Orleans as well with a Mardi Gras night on the last night of the festival with some of the Neville brothers, Ian Neville, Ivan Neville, the Dumpster Funk guys, George Porter Jr., Leo Nocentelli, John Cleary, and the Absolute Monster Gentlemen. Put on your beads.
The Absolute Monster Gentleman.
John Cleary, yeah. He was Bonnie Raitt's keyboard player for a long time, and that'll be a really fun party night. We've had Trombone Shorty for many, many years. He's not available this year. He's going to Europe, but this is going to be a finale party that'll be really, really cool, and I think people will enjoy it. We're going to have a frontline brass act playing prior to the 7 o'clock set with John Cleary. So, I'm really proud of the diversity and all-inclusiveness of our program. There's an old saying, you can't please everybody, no matter what you do, but we try our damn best to do that, and I think we've done a pretty good job of it.
I'm curious to know what you think of the city's decision to keep Parcel 5 green, because, for a long time, there's been this debate on as it developed, but then when these festivals happen, the Jazz Festival, but other events as well, that space gets utilized in really interesting ways, and it's been a pretty cool place.
I love it.
I
love it.
I support it for the festival.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great place to have concerts. When you see that, there's a couple of great photos taken from the top of, I think, the Bank of America building looking down and the lights on the buildings and the full crowd. And it's something to be really proud of, to see that amount of people there with having a great time, enjoying music, having time with friends and family and celebrating the American art form and all its genres and styles. And there's nothing that makes a producer happy to see everybody going away smiling and want to do it again. And that's why you have a festival. Festive. It's festive. It's fun. It's happy. It's all-inclusive. It's, there's nobody that's excluded from this.
And if listeners missed the news this week, the city did make that official announcement. So Parcel 5, I think they're keeping the name Parcel 5. Yes, Megan mm-hmm. Mack, is that right? Yeah, sounds like they are.
That's wonderful.
And it's going to stay green space, and it's going to stay programmable for different festivals.
Wonderful.
You'll see it for Fringe, Jazz, countless others. I'm not going to go down a list because I'll leave something out. Mm-hmm. But that is the plan for that space. There was like a year on this program where like every month people were angry about Parcel 5 or they wanted it to be this, they wanted it to be that. So here we are. It's going to be green. RochesterJazz.com for information on where you want to plan your visits and trips to jazz festival, artists to see. When are you going to be performing, John Nugent?
I usually show up. Well, last year I had a bit of an issue. I had a detached retina in my eye, which is healed.
You look good.
I feel okay. I didn't play last year, and I usually play every night at the jam session. I have for 20 years. I missed last year because of...
But this year?
A gas bubble in my eye. Yes, I'm going to sit in at the jam session every night. I'll jump up with Soul Stew with Mark on the Thursday night. You know, you never know. I've jumped in with artists all over the place. If I'm able to and have a minute to play a song or two, we'll jump up there, yeah.
I want people to know where the jam session's going to be.
It's at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the downstairs bar, and it goes from 10 until 2-ish.
10 until 2-ish.
Every night, and it's a means to an end for me. I mean, I love to play. That's why I got into the business of music. I've lived the life of a touring musician and made 10 records of my own and played with a lot of wonderful artists, from Ella Fitzgerald to Tony Bennett to Rosemary Clooney to even as diverse as Stevie Ray Vaughan. I played with Stevie Ray Vaughan in Dallas, Texas in the 80s. So playing is the means to – the business is just the means to an end to go up and play.
Still want to play.
Absolutely.
And you and I have talked about how, especially in – this particular genre, there's going to be moments where performers will kind of step back and let someone step forward, but mm-hmm. it's not an effort to sort of dominate the sound. There's so much collaboration and improvisation happening. So with that in mind, how often are you performing at these jam sessions and you're just blown away? You go, I mean, I knew this guy was good, but wow.
Well, boy, I just go back to the Crown Plaza days and the early start of our festival in 2003. Funny story, I remember sitting in with Bob Snyder, and we had presented George Benson that night, and Bob was playing alongside me, and next thing I heard a different kind of sound, and I look over, and George Benson had walked up and picked up Bob's guitar and was playing on Cherokee with me. So that was pretty darn cool. But, you know, to see Wynton Marsalis sitting in or see any of the great artists that come here, I'm very dialed into what their abilities are because I vet everybody that I program. I don't just book for political purposes or for someone said you have to book this artist. If I don't want to play with them, probably not going to book them.
That's a really interesting baseline for you.
It is.
Would I like to jam with this person?
Exactly. Yeah.
Or this band. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm an educated artist, man. I've transcribed John Coltrane and I've memorized Sonny Rollins solos and, you know, I got to sit behind Ella Fitzgerald and hear her sing Mack the Knife. So I know what's good. And if it's something that someone else thinks is good, well, you know, if it hits me right the right way, I'll consider booking them for sure.
Well, one person you booked is Christy DeShiel, who's with us
wonderful.
Now. Christy is on the line with us, a vocalist, composer with the Christy DeShiel Quartet. That is going to be a Friday performance coming up on Friday, 6:15 to 7:15 and 10 to 11 at Max of Eastman Place. Mm-hmm. You can get in with a club pass or $30 at the door. And then I think we've got Christy on the line now. Are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Hey, Christy.
Christy, I hate to do this, but I'm going to, just because my college advisor's last name was spelled the same as yours, do you say DeShiel?
I say DeShiel.
DeShiel.
I think there are many different pronunciations. I just say DeShiel.
I want to respect the artist. Christy DeShiel is with us. And you can find Christy's work on, you know, where you stream your music. Although Christy's been in sort of different groups. That's a trio, quartet. I found some of your work online on your own. So we got to cut I'm going to play in a minute just so the audience knows your voice. But
okay.
Who do you spend most of your time playing with these days, Christy?
Well, right now I'm spending a lot of time playing with my quartet, the Christy DeShiel Quartet. And I recently just started working with the incredible Terry Lynn Carrington and her band.
Great.
And as well as Stefan Harris and his group. So I'm really grateful to be, you know, in several bands right now.
You mind if I play a little bit of Thinking of You?
Oh, yes. That's one of my favorites.
Well, let's do that. Let's listen to Christy DeShiel here.
Although yesterday has come and gone, you're still the one, and your love, it lingers like the sweetest of songs ever sung. Though we've moved on, our love still warms is your smile.
Christy Daschle, and Thinking of You. John, beautiful. You got a big smile on your face over there, John.
Just Newton. Beautiful, Christy. Really great. Really, really great.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So when you're writing music, are you doing a lot of writing? Are you working with others on the creation of music most of the time when you're recording, Christy?
So I do most of my own writing. I play a little bit of piano. It's hard for me to even claim that as a second instrument because I know what it takes, you know, to really develop your sound on an instrument. So I say that very loosely. But I guess I play like composer's piano. So enough to sit down and compose my music, arrange my music, and then I bring it to my band or I take it to my band. And, you know, I have an idea or a shape that I want to create. And then they just, you know, they go and take it and create, you know, beyond what I generally can even imagine.
You've been to Rochester before, Christy?
I think I have. I have been to Rochester one time. This was, I was singing with this group, Afro Blue, and we were doing like a concert with the a cappella ensemble at Eastman, the Yellow Jackets. That's the one time I've been to Rochester.
6 or 7 years ago, I believe, maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, this was a while ago. Mm-hmm.
So what are you looking forward to this Friday?
I'm just so happy to play with my band. You know, anytime I get to share space with them, I'm just like thrilled. And then I'm really happy to be a part of this festival. Like, this has been one of the festivals I've always wanted to play. So, you know, to be playing this festival with my group and to be kind of in the setting of a club is always one of my favorite spaces to be, you know, because I feel like I really get to connect with the audience in an intimate way. So, yeah, many things. I'm looking forward to connecting with the audience and playing with my band.
Can you tell me a little bit more about this is on the list of festivals you wanted to play? I mean, John and I were talking earlier this hour about how over 21 years of this event, you know, it establishes a reputation and people start to hear about it. And maybe musicians who've been here start to tell their colleagues about it. Tell me a little bit more about your expectations and what you feel like you know about it.
Yeah, so I think in the last couple of years, Rochester Jazz Festival has presented some of my favorite artists, like the Baylor Project. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw the Baylors were on this, I wanted to go to the festival myself, you know, just like as a festival goer. But, you know, for whatever reason, I just couldn't make it. And so ever since, I've always wanted to bring my band to the festival.
Well, we're excited to have you here Friday night. And, you know, that opening slot at Max has got some history to it. A few very well-established artists have played in that slot. And I was mentioning to your manager that this is where I wanted you to start with us. And, you know, Norah Jones has played that slot. Liz Wright, Give Tangellin has played in there. And some other artists that were rising stars, you know, Sasha Berliner. So it's kind of got a nice touch to it. And you'll have two beautiful audiences, and we're excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you. I feel so honored. I mean, Norah Jones and Liz Wright, you can stop right there.
They're great. They're great. Well, you've got a great career ahead of you, and we look forward to welcoming you here this Friday.
Thank you so much. Christy, thank you for, you know, taking a chance on an artist like me.
Oh, there's no risk with you, babe. You play, you sing great.
Thank you. I mean, before I let you go, one more question, because, you know, I know that when you're trying to make your way, there's all kinds of audiences that you'll end up playing for. I mean, anybody who is a professional musician has played very small crowds, some bigger crowds, some very locked-in crowds, sometimes events that are part of other things and you don't feel like the audience is that focused. It strikes me that you're going to have one of the really focused audiences that is here for the music, that is experienced with that wants the music. What does that mean to you as a performer, Christy, knowing that you're coming to a place where the audience is locked in on what you're doing?
I mean, it means so much. You know, the tradition of this music is to be played in front of clubs and, you know, audiences where maybe there's a little clatter of a glass, you know. some sound. So, you know, I'm used to that sound being a part of the music. But, you know, when audiences are locked in, I just feel like the possibilities are endless, because when the audiences lock into you, then there's this energy that you exchange, which makes you feel like, okay, I have the freedom to really explore, and they're coming right with me. So it ends up being kind of like, you know, a magical sort of like where you start levitating almost when the audiences are locked in, to the point where you can really take flight together.
Oh, wow.
That's so true.
And that's what a Rochester jazz audience is, isn't it, John?
Mm-hmm. You'll bet. They know their music, Kit Christie, and you're going to feel a lot of love here Friday, so we're excited.
Thanks for making time for us, Christie.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited. I can't wait. I wish I could just be there now after this. Friday can't come soon enough.
Hey, Christy, where can people find your work, and what's the right place that you'd want them to find your work?
Well, you know, I'm streaming on all platforms right now. So Apple Music, Spotify. Of course, you can buy the music, which is incredible, too, on iTunes. And then I'm also pretty active on my Instagram, which is Christy-Shield. And you can also find me on my website, which is christy-shield.com.
You've got a phenomenal voice, Christy. We can't wait to see you Friday. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm looking forward.
Safe travel. See you soon.
Christy-Shield, okay. Vocalist, composer with the Christy-Shield Quartet. Once again, if you want to see her,
Get in line.
You're in line, huh?
There'll be a lineup for sure.
There'll be a line. Friday, 6:15 to 7:15 and 10 to 11. At Max of Eastman Place. You got your club pass, great, or $30 at the door there. So I like that idea of that opening slot sort of having a little history now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, serendipity has a lot to do with programming. And, you know, in the first year, I remember hearing Nora Jones Come Away With Me. It was in the fall of 2001. And I heard the record, and I said, oh, I got to book this girl. And we made the booking with Monterey International in Chicago, and then she blew up. She sold 8 million copies of her record, did all the Tonight Show and, you know, Letterman Show back then. And the you know, kind of like Leve on the Wednesday night at Eastman Theater, we sold 2,100 tickets in 15 minutes. And there's a 4,000-plus waiting list for this June 26th for Leve, who would have known? I just knew she was wonderful and would sell some tickets. And we, here you go, right? So... you never know. Mark and I aren't star makers. We're presenters. But having an appearance on the slot definitely says something in the industry. So that's a nice connection to the opening slot at Max's.
Before I bring in the next performer on the line, let me just ask you. We've talked about this over the years, and I'm curious to know if it's evolved at all. Because you're plugged in everywhere. You and Mark, I know, and for you especially, you're plugged into the music. You're always looking for a Christy-Shield, you know, a Nora Jones back in the day, whatever. Are you going to other festivals? Are you looking to see who's playing where? Is it word of mouth? Like, how are you
absolutely
finding
the new... There's a network, and I think a buddy of mine is listening downstate at Saratoga Performing Arts Center, Fryhofer's Jazz Fest, Danny Melnick, and I talk a lot about artists. We go to conferences. I talk to all the Canadian presenters in Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, and the Western festivals. All the agents are in touch. So we hear about emerging artists. We hear about them, and, you know, we're listening. Well, who's in the Hot House magazine in New York playing at all the clubs? And word of mouth travels fast. And if you have something to say on the instrument, we're going to find out about it, or your voice, whatever you do to present your music, you know, inevitably we'll hear about you.
Well, we're going to talk to Joe Locke in a moment.
That
here.
Guy.
I don't really know what a vibraphone is. I need an education.
Oh, Joe and I go way back. And I'll tell you, we've got a few funny sayings between each other, ourselves. And I've been fortunate to play with Joe overseas. And he's a dear friend, and he's one of a kind, legendary Rochesterian. The vibraphone is a magical instrument. It's a piano, but it's not.
Well, he's a member of the Rochester Music Hall of Fame.
Should be.
Playing on Sunday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. and 9:15 at the Temple Theater.
Yes, lovely room for Joe, and he's played there with his band. And it's a special night with Jeffrey Keezer, Joe, and our good friend Tommy Smith from Scotland, who's going to join a trio of high-flying individuals who have a lot to say on their instruments. And Joe is really one of our great artists, not just on the vibraphone, but in any instrument in jazz. And one of my friends, and he's just a fabulous guy and funny, incredible musician, top shelf.
Let's bring him in now. Hey, Joe Locke, how are you, sir?
Hey, how are you, Dave? It's good to hear you guys. John, are you keeping your flaps?
Flaps
up, man?
Are down, ready to go, buddy. That's a Newfoundland saying. We keep our flaps. You know Elmer Fudd with the hat with the flaps.
Yeah.
Keep your flaps here, buddy. Keep her down. Because it's cold and windy.
I gotta tell you, can I just say, Christy Dashiell, bro?
Ooh.
Christy Dashiell, man.
She's great.
I got hip to Christy Dashiell a couple of years ago, man, and I'm such a fan. And I just played the Mid-Atlantic Jazz Festival with her brother, Carol.
Okay.
CV Dashiell, who's an incredible drummer. The entire family, the father, Carol Dashiell, was the bass player with Bobby Watson and Victor Lewis's Horizon Band back in the 90s.
Just a little history there, hey?
Wow. Yeah, but Christy she's amazing, man. Mm-hmm. That was nice. I was on hold waiting, to come on, and it was like, oh, Christy, beautiful, man.
She's great.
She's out of sight. Yeah, yeah.
Well, going back reading City Magazine and a profile of you from a few years back, Joe, I know that, you were a teenager growing up here studying drums and piano, and I think it was your mother who saw an ad for a vibraphone and bought it. I mean, is that how that happened?
Mother Mary, yeah. She
Mother
saw an
Mary
ad in the paper.
To me.
She wanted me to play the glockenspiel in the marching band, and she saw an ad. How's that for a statistic mother? And she saw an ad in the want ad for a vibraphone, and she said, Joe, there's something called a vibraphone that's for sale. I think that's like a glockenspiel. Let's go take a look at it. So if there had been a glockenspiel in the want ads, I would be a jazz glockenspiel player today. With the marching hat with the feather in it, I'd be rocking that hat. Man,
keyboard players always have a side keyboard. You should bring the Glock, man. Put it on the side, a little Glock.
Man, I saw that. I saw a vibraphone on commercial television only once, and it was on like the Johnny Carson show or the Mike Douglas show or something. The Captain and Tennille were on, and the captain was using a vibraphone as
really?
as a stand for a DX7. No respect, man. No respect.
Oh, my goodness.
We've been talking about not only the quality of the music, but also so many of these performers are really remarkable live, and they've got their own style. And that's the beauty of seeing somebody live. I mean, you get a chance to see what they put into their music. And Joe kind of dances and moves over the keys in different ways. And I want to kind of key in on some of what you told City here, Joe, which was a little bit surprising. You said about the way you kind of dance over the keys. You said, it's not conscious at all. It's just the joy of playing. I live in a dark place a good amount of the time. I definitely suffer from some dark moods. So it's my expressing joy where the clouds part, and I'm experiencing the joy of music making in the moment. So I don't want to be worried about you, but I'm glad that you got music, man.
Man, basically all I was expressing is the bandstand is a joyous place for me. Making music is a joyous endeavor, and the stage is a joyous place. So especially when you're sharing that music with people like Tommy Smith and Jeffrey Keyser.
Absolutely.
Awesome. How would you describe the way you play live, Joe?
I wouldn't. I would leave that.
Leave it to the audience. There you go.
I'll describe it.
Yeah, there you go, John.
Okay,
Nugent.
So Joe, I think is maybe one of the most expressive musicians I've played with and listened to. Every note means something. There's no fluff there. Everything has got a purpose, a place, it means something. And just like any great creative artist, they want to reach into that person's soul that's listening to them and make them feel something really good. And when they walk away, they just go, wow, that was just transcending for me and levitating for me. And when Joe plays, every time I've heard him play, it's levitational. And that's the joy that he's talking about. It's a feeling you can't buy. You can't order it anywhere. Yeah. You have to bring it, and it comes from within, and it's from the heart. It's from the soul. It's from your spirit, and your spirit comes through your instrument. It's a conversation. And these three you guys are going to be talking with each other on that stage next week, it'll be a conversation that's really interesting.
Man, I feel like, thanks, John. I feel like anybody any the music or any art at its best is really when the artist is conveying how they feel. Mm-hmm. No matter what that emotion is, they're conveying how they feel, and when the listener hears it, it makes the listener say, wow, I'm not alone in my feelings, because that person who's making that music, who's playing that song the way they're playing it, is the way I feel. And in that sharing of that experience, the listener connects with the player, and in that act doesn't feel alone in the world. And I think that's the most beautiful thing about whether it's literature, whether it's fine art, or whether it's music, is making that connection, that human connection. And that's really what it's all about, man. It's, I mean, whether it's Billy Joel or John Coltrane or Erykah Badu or Brahms, you know, it's that making that human connection.
There's a reason why we're on Connections with Evan Dawson right now.
There you go.
There you go. That's the key word, connections.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Joe, before I let you go, I know that I have kind of a reputation with the audience as being a get off my lawn guy about technology and AI. And John and I talked a little about that earlier this hour. But what I wanted to ask you was just how important you think it is for a young Joe Locke out there who's maybe 15 years old, maybe looking for a place, doesn't really know if they fit. And, you know, no one's put a vibraphone, no one's put a piano or a guitar or a trombone in their hand. And you don't know how a kid's going to respond to the chance to connect with that. But I think we're just thinking, well, I can get on and lay down a drum track to this. I don't need to play with somebody else. I can use this program to create the piano track for it. I don't actually have to physically play with somebody. And more of the music that's out there is not, you know, people together connecting in the way that you just described. And that kind of worries me. I wonder how you feel, Joe.
Paul Blais said many years ago, 50 years ago, Paul Blais said, we're fast approaching a point where what we know as musical instruments will be unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. And so I think everything is relevant. And I think however one expresses that thing I was talking about, human emotion through whatever means it whatever prism it goes through, you know, technologically, is cool with me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not judging whether if it's not acoustic, if it's then it's not pure. I think everything is relevant.
I just want and people
some,
being
young
together.
People
that's
who
what
are
I
doing
want.
Stuff. Some young people who are doing some stuff with samples and doing stuff that's really high tech are making some beautiful music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so everything's relevant, man.
Well, Joe and Joe Locke, Locke Keyser Smith, Sunday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. and another show at 9:15 at the Temple Theater. We'll see you there, Joe. Thank you for sharing a few minutes with us here on the program today.
Thank you so much. And John, I look forward to seeing
love
you.
Love you,
man.
Joe. See you in a few days, brother. Take care.
Okay, love you too, man. Okay, bye-bye.
What a guy.
He's the best, man. Joe is so cool. He's like the essence of a jazz cat. You know, you think of the hip cats. Well, Joe is not only hip, he's Joe. And there's nobody else like him, and he's a sweetheart. I'm so happy he's coming up again, and he'll come back with his own band as well. This is a special project, and as you see Tommy Smith here, he's been here many years in a row. He's like family to me. He's like a brother, and one of the great saxophonists in the world. I'm a sax player. He's come with different projects, and I asked him, what would you like to do? And I said, let's do a trio with Jeffrey, Joe, and myself, and here we are next week.
All right, so there's a lot that we're not going to be able to tell you about, but in our closing minutes here, mm-hmm. I'll give John a little bit of the stage to tell you about some of the acts that are coming in that you do want people to
Well, for
to
people
about.
Who don't have a pass or don't have a ticket,
okay.
The city of Rochester, Wegmans, of course, sponsors our Parcel 5 stage. We really, those are great. You know, there's no cost. Bring the family, come down, come early. The Jazz Street stage from 4 o'clock daily. I think a couple of days are 3:30. The regional high school bands. We've even got a band coming up from Florida, Glen Elg High School. They've raised money to come up to play at the Rochester Jazz Festival. We've got the military band, the Blues. I'm forgetting the name, what the billing is. Let me just look here at the program. My brain is not working. U.S. Army Blues. We've had the ambassadors. We've had the airmen of note. So our government is sending a group to play the U.S. Army Blues, which are top-level professionals. Soul Stew on the Thursday, the Music Educators Big Band, our scholarship concert on Monday night. Soul Stew will be back again. Al Shez and the Brothers of Funk. So a lot of free shows. The workshops from 1 to 2 in room 128 Eastman, sponsored by Wegmans as well. Come and bring your instrument. You can play, you can listen to the artists perform and talk. Two new venues, the Mercantile, the Inn on Broadway, all the same venues that you remember from last year, the Innovation Theater, Montage, Wild Room, Little Theater, Roots and Americana shows. The Eastman Theater has some tickets left for Taj Mahal Friday night, Lee Ritenour Saturday night. Leve sold out. John Oates, one half of Hall & Oates. You've heard a little in the news about their differences. It's all over publishing. They're friends. They still promote their materials online. They're, you know, it's business. But he's got a show doing an acoustic night. And then we've got the great Samara Joy.
I could go for that.
You should go. I think I know someone who can get you a ticket, man.
No, I don't. I'm glad to pay for a ticket. I was just riffing on it.
He's great.
I can't go for that.
Now, Samara, like Christy Dashiel,
yeah,
who is on her way up. Hopefully her credentials and her recognition will generate, like Samara, who's elevated to where she was at Max, she was at Kilbourne, and now she's at the Eastman Theater. You know, and there's still a few hundred tickets left of 2,100, but she's over 1,500 paid right now. So that'll be a great night. Just the overall vibe. Come downtown if you don't have a ticket. Just walk around. Food trucks everywhere on East Avenue. Lots of great security. We're so secure downtown with the city of Rochester, private security, the state police. It's a very safe environment. We encourage everybody to come down to celebrate what's yours, and that's the city of Rochester. And this festival is a big part of it. We're excited. We want everybody to come and have a great time and smile because it's summertime.
Let's see if you know the answer to this. What percentage of the acts this year are first time in Rochester?
Oh, boy. Wow, that's a tough one to go off the
best
top.
Best guess.
25%, 30%?
25, 30%.
Maybe even more. Let's go down the list here real quick. Okay, let me go. Okay, you ready? One, two. S. Edmar Castaneda. He's never been here. A harp player from Venezuela. Stacy Kent. One of the great chanteuses from overseas. She's big in Europe. She's going to be here. Bill Charlap, Django Festival All-Stars. Brubeck Brothers have been here. Ikepin Kweli, another great singer. Electric Keep has been here. You know, there's some familiar faces, a lot of new stuff. Stanley Jordan's coming here doing the music of Jimi Hendrix, kind of an acoustic vibe. California Guitar Trio's been here. I mean, there's so many great bands. Benny Benack, the trumpet player. Luca Charla, solo orchestra. Solo violin with sounds and pedals, and he's crazy cool from Italy. It's just so much music, man. It's relentless. It's a lot, maybe more than 20%.
So maybe a third, something like that.
Yeah, a third. So but some of the musicians have been here with other groups, perhaps.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's over 1,800 musicians in the program this year.
So what is it like when you have an artist who comes for the first time and they blow it out of the water and they want to come back? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you're creating the puzzle. And it's got to obviously fit their schedule. They're traveling, a lot of them internationally. But Rochester is somewhere they'd love to come back. Do you have a goal of saying, well, let's get some new faces every year and then
like maybe- everything in life, there's a business behind the deal. There's a deal to be made. So that's part of it. It's serendipity. There's timing. Are they touring? It's routing. It's scheduling. It's communications with other promoters. This is a massive, massive jigsaw puzzle that takes many, many months to put together. And some of the pieces fall away. Some of them come in together quickly. You know, when you do a big 10,000-piece puzzle, some of them you can see it coming together. And then you find a little, then the dog comes along and chews a few pieces, or you spill your coffee and you got to go, oh, I got to figure out how to fit this piece in here. There'll always be adjustments on the fly. And inevitably, it ends up being a beautiful painting, and then it's over. And then we have to start it all over again. Fresh canvas, new slate. Everybody's got a favorite band. They can send their materials. Everybody's got something they want to participate with this great festival because it's going to help their cause or their thing that they want to do. Sometimes we can engage. Sometimes we just can't because there's not enough room at the inn. You know, there's only so much you can do. And as you asked at the beginning about are we at altitude? Yes. This jet is in the air. And the goal is to get everybody to their Shangri-La of musical enjoyment by the end of the week where they're left wanting more.
Last 90 seconds or so, what's your favorite venue to watch
Me?
A show? To watch a show.
To watch? Boy, that's a tough one. They're all, you know, the sound is different in most venues. I'll be just as excited to walk into the back of Wild Room as I am sitting in the front row of the Eastman, or, you know, standing at the back of the Little Theater and listening to a string group, you know, or I like it all. I really do. I don't have one specific spot.
It's a good mix of venues, though.
It really is. Yeah. It's, and that's why when I first came to Rochester R&D, prior to anything happening here, I saw all these venues downtown, and I saw the lay of the land in the Eastman and in the heart of the festival on Gibbs Street, which we call Jazz Street. And here we are 21 years later, you know. Things evolve, and they're nurtured, and they grow, and they develop, and they create a character and a style of their own, and they become a brand. And this is a brand now. It's recognizable. And fortunately, the people that are involved make it what it is. The music makes it what it is, but the people involved, the team, my partner, Mark Iacona, our entire team of support, Gene and Amanda and Jane, Jenna, all the J's, we call them, the girls, the team, the Carl Stabenow, all of our production, the great drivers we have that give up their time. There's 30 drivers that have been with us for a long time. And this is a family of operation, a family operation that brings a great event to the community.
Have fun.
We will. See you on Jazz Street.
Friday. First notes played in the afternoon on Friday?
Around 4 o'clock.
Around 4 o'clock on Jazz Street.
Yep. High school bands. Let's see. Who's kicking off? Who's the very first show?
I should have asked you this because now our music's going to play.
I've got it memorized here, boy. I'll tell you what. The Harley High School Jazz Band. That's where my daughter and son go to school.
Harley High School Jazz
Greatest,
Band.
Greatest, really, really great school for the kids.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Evan. We'll see you all downtown.
John Nugent, co-producer of the CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, the 21st edition, starts Friday, rochesterjazz.com. From the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening, and we are back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.